You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello and welcome to Islanders Anxiety, the podcast from Lighthouse Hockey. My name is Dan Saracini. Joining me this morning via Skype is my friend Mike Leboff. And Mike, the Islanders roller coaster ride to the playoffs continue with another big dip in the track last night.
Yeah, it was about as good as I felt after a win in quite some time when they beat the Coyotes on Sunday afternoon, and I was riding high, and I am now worried again. And now I think we're faced with the reality that I think this team is probably going to be in a scrap just for home ice advantage and a spot outside of those wild card spots rather than the top of the division.
It would appear that way. They are now in third place. They're behind the Penguins due to a tiebreaker. They're 4 points up on the Hurricanes, who are, I believe, are in seventh place right now. And they have six games left, I believe the Islanders do. I'll double-check on that, but I'm almost certain they have six games. No, sorry, they have five games left. Yeah, there's 1 week left in the regular season. So, you know, there's a possible 10 points there, and they're only 3 points still behind the Capitals. First place isn't completely out of the question. It appears unlikely that they will drop completely out of the playoff race, but they could, you know, if disaster strikes, they could potentially end up in a wild card spot at seventh or eighth. Full disclosure, Mike and I spoke on Monday after the weekend sweep of the Flyers and Coyotes, and it was a great conversation. We were in a pretty good mood. Things were looking up, and because I'm a dope, it didn't record. So that has now gone into the ether. I have per Islanders regulations, I have run the steps at Nassau Coliseum as punishment. And so now we're back. And after an eventful Tuesday, and we'll talk about the game first, it was a 4-0 shutout loss in Columbus with an empty net goal. It's one of those, it's a little bit like the game in Detroit that they played a couple weeks ago, where I thought they played pretty well. Like, for the first period, it was basically all Islanders, and the second period was more of a mix. But, you know, they had chances. Well, they had shots and they had possession and they had chances, but they didn't really have like a lot of traffic in front of Bobrovsky. And there was only one power play doled out in the entire game, and it went to the Blue Jackets, and Ryan Dzingel scored on it. And that was early in the game. Like, it was, I don't know, it was within the first 10 minutes of the game. And you thought, oh, well, they got all this time to get back. And they just never did. And it just, they had possession. They just didn't do anything with it. A lot of one and dones, as Butch said. And, you know, in a vacuum, you're like, eh, well, you know, I mean, they played okay. They just couldn't score, and it happens. But, you know, when it's the sixth from the last game of the season, and you're trying to maintain second place or get up into first place, it's incredibly demoralizing, regardless of how good they played.
Yeah, I thought, like, they played a great first 3 minutes. I was like, oh, great, this is the team that we watched. And, yeah, once the Blue Jackets scored on that power play, it was there was a good response. The Islanders almost scored on, like, the next shift, but I think it was Letty on, like, a shot that was robbed by Bobrovsky. But after that, I can't really remember too many notable offensive bursts or whatever. And then the second period especially was bad, I thought. And, you know, we spoke a lot about early in the year that this is a team that's not built to come back. And then they started to come back all the time. And then now you're like, oh, maybe they're just not – there's really just not a team that's built to come back, because, you know, where I couldn't figure out where the goal was going to come from yesterday. It was – the Blue Jackets were up 1-0. It felt like it could have been 4-0, because it just didn't ever – it never really looked like the Islanders – I just couldn't even picture in my head the goal and the post-goal celebration too. And, it was just confusing. Because it wasn't their worst effort by far, and you hope that, you know, the team doesn't overreact and, you know, maybe sit Michael Dalcol, who I thought was pretty good, and then you know, just make the team worse because they lost the game that he played in. And those are now thoughts we have to have because they lost, and that's it. And they've got a tough game. The next game is tough, and I don't really think they're in danger of, you know, falling out of the top eight, but yeah, they need to, you know, get probably 4 more points to avoid that second wild card spot. And, you know, we've said all along that the Islanders' probably best matchup is with the Penguins, and that's what they're staring at right now. And the Penguins are playing well, and so are the Capitals are playing well, and the Hurricanes are playing well, and the Canadians they're playing like decently, and the Blue Jackets have been helter skelter, but there's like a common theme among their possible opponents is that they're all playing pretty well except for the Islanders.
Yeah, who have been shut out in 3 of the last 5 games.
They either shut a team out or they get shut out. It's very frustrating. Yeah, right.
That is kind of funny. Just before we came on, I watched the Barry Trotz press conference from the night before, and he seemed to give a lot more credit to the Blue Jackets than taking credit away from the Islanders. I think he liked the Islanders' effort, but you know, he gave credit to Columbus for playing a really, really good defensive game. I mean, the Blue Jackets are a lot like the Bruins, and who are a lot like the Islanders. They play that defensive style, and they wait for you to make a mistake. And in this case, you know, the Islanders were the ones making the mistakes, and it ended up in their net as opposed to the other way around, which is what John Tortorella also said after the game, which is, you know, usually the Islanders are the ones who are waiting for you to make a mistake, and then they score, and that's how it works. So, you know, I think it's sometimes safe to give another team credit, and Columbus needed that win to keep. Had they lost that game with the Habs winning, I mean, that basically would have been it for them. So I think in this case it's okay to give them credit, as disappointing as it was for the Islanders. But, you know, it is a worrying trend that they just are coming up empty at the worst possible time. As far as Dalcol goes, Trotz said he liked his game, so I think he'll still be in the lineup on Thursday in Winnipeg. I don't think Tom Kuhnhackl was the difference between the Islanders winning and losing that game. And, you know, I thought, yeah, he played okay, but, I mean, he's done what he had been doing, which is, you know, he played that good game in the corners but didn't contribute much offensively. I thought Letty was probably the best Islander player because he was the most noticeable. He had a lot of rushes up the ice, but, you know, in typical Nick Letty fashion, he's so quick to get up the ice that before you know it, he's almost like parallel to the goal, and he has no shot. Like, there's nothing he could do with it. And so there was a lot of that. You know, Barzell was kind of knocked around a lot, and he got a penalty for roughing, and he just was clearly very, very frustrated with what was going on. And, you know, as bad as the Islanders' power play has been, they had no power plays in the game and didn't deserve any, but at the same time, that's not going to help either. So, I mean, it was very much a playoff game, and they just came up on the short end of it, and it's, again, at the worst spot. If this was November, I almost would have been somewhat encouraged by it because, like, hey, you know what? You played all right, and it just happens. Sometimes the goalie gets you, and sometimes the other team's defense gets you, but this is a bad time. And again, the worst part is that it came off of a weekend, which was, frankly, awesome. They played two really, really good games in Philly and then at home against the Coyotes. They shut out the Coyotes 2-0 on Sunday. Robin Leonard played in both games. He let up, you know, one kind of fluky goal to the Flyers and then one power play goal, which is kind of how power plays are supposed to work. But they played really well in both games and earned both wins. And we seem to be sitting pretty on Monday. Again, had I recorded it, everybody would have heard us sitting pretty, but it didn't happen. And now we're kind of right back into, you know, depression again, wondering, oh my God, what's going to happen to these guys?
Yeah, I think that's right. It wasn't like a terrible loss by any stretch. It's just now the losses are just have a lot more gravitas to them when you get to this point in the season. And those games, the Flyers, the Coyotes, and the Canadiens games were all such, you know, like emotional highs and lows, with the Canadiens game being especially low and just an absolute burn the tape game after Bruins game, which is also a burn the tape.
Somebody asked
game. So he thought, all right.
Somebody asked Trotz about, what are you concerned that your team's been shut out 3 out of the last 5 games? And he was like, well, 2 of those games are junk. Just throw them out. Like, I don't even want to talk about it. So those are the 2 you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Those 2 games. And then, so you think, all right, maybe when they hit rock bottom in that Canadian game and we're starting to, you know, start climb their way back and get back on track. And then this game happens. And the fact that it was a shutout is concerning just because the way they've been shooting has been, you know, scary bad. There was some regression that was due shooting wise, and it's coming, but it's also like rearing its head in such a weird way. Like that, I think about that game against the Red Wings where, you know, we hit 13 posts and stuff like that. So it's another weird spot that we're in, and because I don't want to be too worried about the game. They won those 2 games over the weekend that they needed to win to just basically steer clear of the playoff disaster, of missing the playoffs disaster. And now we're in this kind of weird limbo where it's just jockeying for the right matchup. And we might look back, you know, in a week when the playoff race is, or in a week and a half when the playoff race is set, and just be like, you know what, that loss actually worked out in our favor in the long run just because it got us the matchup we wanted. And so like that's, These games now have some like weird feel to them because of that. Like you just want it to be the fix it Felix games, to steal one of Barry Trotz's quotes. The next, you know, 5 that they get their game together and go into the playoffs with some sort of, you know, cohesion among them. Whether that means that they're second or third in the division, you know, hopefully it's second so they get home ice. But you know, it's just hopefully they get. It works out in their favor with that. Whatever amount of points they get puts them in second place and against the Penguins is what I'm hoping for. And so that's such a weird thing.
Yeah, I know. I was gonna say, I hope we don't come to, because I feel the same way, but hopefully we don't come to regret that that feeling. But to me, I'm more concerned about home ice. You know, at this point, I don't know if they have enough road to get back into first place without reeling off 5 straight wins. But I want them to get home ice in particular, because I feel like, for them, I think for most teams it's probably not a big deal, but for this team being what it is, being, you know, this season being what it is, and this roster construction being what it is, I feel like home ice is really, really a big deal for them. And I think that could swing a series either way if it's, you know, you get 4 games at the Coliseum versus 4 games someplace else.
Yeah, it's definitely gigantic. And it's, this team had such a good goal differential for so long. Now the Islanders, They're kind of handing away tiebreakers right now, so they're going to need to finish ahead of the Penguins to do that. Which honestly, you know, feels today. The other day it didn't feel, you know, 12 hours ago it didn't feel insurmountable, but now at 8 o'clock on Wednesday morning it does. But
well, and the Penguins, like, I hadn't even realized this, but the Penguins' schedule is ridiculous. Like they they play the rain. They already play the Rangers, beat the heck out of them. They play them again. They play the Red Wings twice. I think they have a game against the Caps or somebody. Somebody else is pretty good.
Yeah,
and that's about it. And it's like, seriously,
the Rangers. They played the Rangers like 11 times in the last 2 weeks. The Penguins. The NHL just like just send them to send them MSG. Right. Put it on NBC Sports. Nobody will notice. But yeah, that's frustrating. And
yeah,
their team is like they're playing well, which is frustrating. But their team is so ripe for the picking and has so many holes in it. Obviously, they have two of the best players in the world on it. But
one of them's hurt right now.
Yeah,
so.
It's going to be like a strange kind of last 10 days of the year, just because you know I'm sure we will. Want to win every game, but there's a chance that like a win, you know, in the last game of the season means the is a win or a loss is like picking their opponent. So we gotta. I'm trying to like mentally prepare myself for that kind of stuff coming in these last five games.
I was remembering. I had totally forgotten about this, but remember the year that they played Florida in the playoffs? People were accusing them of like losing games down the stretch so that they could play the Panthers. And
who were they trying to quote unquote avoid? Was the Lightning?
I think it might have been the Penguins.
The Lightning? Yeah.
I don't remember.
But yeah, I remember that. And I remember Capuano having like a funny quote to say about it. But yes, I digress.
Yeah, I mean, that, and which, you know, again, I hate to keep talking about an episode that nobody heard, but, you know, we had a whole conversation about how it seems like nobody's really rooting for the Islanders, even though they're kind of like the ultimate underdog story. They're just the underdog that nobody's rooting for, so I guess they're just kind of a dog. But this is a different case. Like, I don't think they're trying. I mean, Trott said we're not, you know, we're trying to win games here. It's not like the effort's not there. We're trying to get back and take the whole thing, but it just didn't happen. I am glad you brought up goal differential, though, because all this time, yeah, the Islanders had been leading the league in goals against, and we had kind of been looking at the Bruins as sort of the standard to be set because they're always so defensively tight. But really, the team to really watch is Dallas. So the Islanders have 188 goals against as of right now, and the Stars have also 100. So, you know, it's kind of small potatoes in the long run, but if you were kind of hoping that the Islanders would go from giving up the most goals in the season to giving up the least, we got to kind of keep an eye on Dallas because they've got as many shutouts, I think, as the Islanders do. And that was another funny thing about the weekend games was that the Islanders tied a team record with their 10th shutout of the season. Each goalie has five, and that has not happened too often. So, you know, it really sucks that, you know, one game can swing your fan momentum that wildly. But that's pretty much where we're at right now. And just they can clinch on Saturday if they win their next two games. So if they get a win Thursday night in Winnipeg, which is not an easy feat at all, the Capitals, I think, beat the Hurricanes. Let me call up Eric Hornick's skinny right here. So if they beat Winnipeg and they get some help, then they beat Buffalo on Saturday, they will have clinched. So because the magic number is only five right now. That sounds pretty easy, but again, that's going to be hard to come by. So if the Isles win in any manner and Montreal-Columbus game ends in regulation, the Islanders' magic number will decrease, or you know, they if they don't get any help, then they can do it on Saturday. They need to win these games, and winning in Winnipeg is not going to be easy. Winning against Buffalo is not going to be easy because they're not going to just sort of roll over and die so the Islanders can clinch a playoff berth at home. They're going to need to win games, and they're going to need to do it by scoring goals, and that means that their top line guys are going to need to kind of step up, and I hate to say it like that because it implies that they haven't, but getting shut out three times in five games is not a good look. Like, they need to really do something and make it happen right now. And you know, patience is great, but when it's late in the game and you need a goal, I think, you know, you have to get a little bit more desperate than they've been in the last couple.
Yeah, definitely. And like their power play obviously has been a
it's been a
travesty, and that came to roost big time against the Flyers. So you think about Matt Barzal, who's like doing everything he can but score. I think it was against the Coyotes where he had an opportunity that I don't know if it hit the post or like Kemper just made a great save or whatever it was. But he's definitely like just completely snake bitten right now, and just I'm just hoping he gets like one or two before the playoffs start, so he's got a little confidence there. Got, you know, it's right now it's either Nelson, Lee, or you know, bust like at this point. Like I don't know where else goals are been coming from. Cizikas, I guess, as well. But like this it's basically those three have been the only ones scoring consistently since the All-Star break, and that can't be the case going into the playoffs. They need to start figuring out what's ailing them offensively and figure it out quick. And hopefully, you know, I'm always rooting for like the game against the Jets to kind of maybe the Islanders need a track meet or something to just like kind of wake up some offensive mojo and, you know, win a 5-4 game, which is very much not what the type of team they are. But it's just I just want to see something where, you know, if the Islanders let in a goal with a minute and a half into the game, it's not the end of the world. It doesn't feel, you know, it's like the game against the Canadians when Leo Komarov took that stupid penalty and the Canadians went up. That made it 2-0, I believe, or 1-0, whatever it was. And
I think that was 1-0.
Yeah, but it's just whatever it was the lights were out. It was over. Like, yeah. And then
I turned that game off after Barzal turned the puck over and Jonathan Drouin came down and scored the Canadiens' third goal. I just closed the browser window, closed my laptop, and just went about the rest of my day. And I didn't miss anything after that, basically. So, yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, it just feels – and that, I mean, it didn't feel that way right away last night. But once the first period ended and the Islanders were still down 1-0, I was like, all right. You know,
the Panarin breakaway goal for me was the end of it. Like, that was – and it was early in the third, too. And at that point, you know, again, I don't want to understate the fact that they were only down 1-0 through two periods. Like they had, and they had played for well enough that you would think that they could get a goal. But after Panarin made a 2-0, I was like, that's it, they're done. They're not gonna. That's all they needed.
Yeah, it was. They always say like when it's like one team's up like 2-0 or 3-1, the next goal is gonna determine the game for the Islanders. It's, you know, and we make fun of Butch all the time because one of his keys to the game is always scoring first. But the Islanders need to figure out a way to score first, otherwise they're screwed. Because, if you flip it the other way around, look how well they played against the Coyotes when they did score first. They, you know, they took that game and they kind of strangled the life out of the Coyotes after they took the early lead. Like, Robin Leonard made a couple of really big saves, but, you know, that's kind of part of the Islanders' game plan, is that they get the lead, they make life very difficult on their opponent, and their goalie makes the timely saves, which Leonard did. And then, I mean, the Flyers game was not as much on script as that, but it felt like the Islanders, after tying that game up after that really fluky goal, that game was all on the Islanders' terms. So,
yeah. I was going to say, even when the Flyers scored that fluky goal, it was the Islanders were kind of in charge. Like they had played better. They had the better of play up until that point. And so I think they recognized that goal was a fluke and we could just keep doing what we're doing. And, you know, halfway through the second period, it was 2-1. So,
yeah, and just to get those two wins, honestly, is like what I'm trying my best to focus on. But like the prospect of having to go into Winnipeg and then is you know, that's like you said, like that's a game. The Islanders are less than 50% chance. That's probably going to be, you know, like a 60-40 game. So then you got the Sabres, which is then ends up on your plate as the game you need to have, because on the other end of that is the Maple Leafs game. And, you know, so that's what's most frustrating about the loss, is that, like, sure, like they played fine, but we're now looking ahead to this weird, you know, kind of glut of games that we need points and we need them. We need other things to go our way as well, to kind of just like set ourselves up. You know, it's not as much scoreboard watching as it would have been had the Islanders lost those two games in over the weekend. But there's some like scoreboard watching in the sense that like we need the Penguins to come off their game. We need the wheels to come off the other teams as well. So now we're in, if the Islanders aren't going to get to the level that they need to be for going into the postseason, we're going to need some breaks in the other part of the universe to go our way, which usually doesn't happen with the Islanders.
No, and it usually doesn't happen for the New York Jets either, which is why I don't watch the Jets that much anymore. It was always like, you know, even when they were okay, you know, it's like, all right, well, yeah, if you know, the Bengals beat this team and the Raiders beat this team, then yeah, that they can, you know, maybe make some and that those games never happen. Like, they just don't, you know, it never works out that way. So yeah, it's a bad situation to be in. You know, the thing I just want to say before we take our first break is that, like, I get that it's frustrating, and, you know, again, like you said before, they're either getting shut out or doing the shutting out, and it's kind of weird that way. But the thing I keep, you know, I try and focus on those two games that they won. You know, Philly's never been a welcome place for them, so that was a huge win for them. And then to come back on a back-to-back and really play well and beat another good team were very encouraging. But my whole thing is, like, I feel like, you know, if we're looking for a piece of positivity, it's sort of that – this is the team that has gotten them to this point. And I get that it's frustrating that they don't score a lot of goals. I get that people are still complaining about the trade deadline and they didn't go out and get anybody. And, you know, that's frustrating too. I took the entire day off to watch the Islanders do absolutely nothing. So that was not a lot of fun. But this is the team that's gotten them to this point. So complaining that they don't score a lot and you know, they're always kind of, you know, they're focused on defense and these guys, like, it's almost in a way I feel kind of bad because – this is the team. This is the meal, as Seinfeld would say. This is the meal. Like, this is what we've gotten this whole time, and this is what got them to first place in the first place. So they're going to have to live and die with this. It's just that they need wins, and they need to, you know, as Trotz would say, stay focused and play their game. And you know, when they get off their game is when they lose, and when they get frustrated is when they lose. And so I think they can win in Winnipeg because, they've won in some tough places this whole season, but it's going to require – a lot of work, and they're going to need some help from guys that have been a little bit quiet. But I can't help but think this is how they've gotten to this point. Like, we wouldn't be here right now if it wasn't for the way they played like this all season long. So we just have to ride it out and hope that, you know, they've got a few more in them to just get this locked down and make it to the playoffs. There are a couple of guys that are not going to be involved in that push, and a couple of new guys who are also on board and that the Islanders signed, and we're going to talk about them right after these messages.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's bachelorette bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
So one guy we haven't talked about so far this episode is Andrew Ladd, and that is because news came out on Tuesday that he will miss 4 to 5 months with a torn ACL. In the other leg that he had not had operated on earlier this season, he had a knee injury, and that kind of cost him a long time this season. But this is the other leg now, and, you know, we've criticized Ladd a lot. He hasn't really done much in his time. The most success he's had as an Islander is – when he goes his annual fishing tournament, he like pulls literal sea monsters out of the water. That's, you know, that's the coolest thing that he's done in his time as an Islander. But it just sucks. Like, it's just, I mean, you feel bad for the guy, and he's 33. I think he's going to be 34, I think, sometime next season. And it's just, you know, he's got 4 more years left in that contract, and he was never going to live up to it anyway, but now he's going to miss this whole thing. And he would actually played okay. He hadn't done anything scoring wise, but that just – I was surprised. What's funny is that I had totally forgotten he had even left that game, and you mentioned it to me last time, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot that that Ladd had to leave that game with an injury, and then just out of the blue, it was like, oh, yeah, he's out 4 or 5 months. I was like, what? Jeez. So that on top of the Valtteri Filppula injury means the Islanders are going to have to kind of juggle the lineup a little bit. It means Michael Dal Colle's in now. Tanner Fritz is in. He's been in for a couple of games now with Filppula out. And, I don't know. I feel bad. I feel bad for Ladd that this has happened to him. I mean, you never want to see something like this happen. But it was so sudden. I'm still almost kind of like trying to wrap my mind around, holy cow, like he just left the game and now he's out 5 months.
Yeah. When we were speaking in our practice episode, I was like, oh yeah, Ladd left that game. Have we heard anything? And we're like, oh no, the Islanders had said literally nothing really all day. Mm-hmm. And then when the news came out, it's like, oh shit. Yeah. Like, it sucks. But, if it means, you know, more ice time for Michael Dal Colle in that role, like it could end up, you know, being a one of those strange blessings in disguise, because I think Dal Colle is a good fit in this system and this top six, and he needs to be given the more ice time than he had, which was zero over the last 2 weeks. It's going to be like a good chance for him, and that's what, you know, concerned me a little bit also about the loss last night, was that, you know, they've had and this isn't as much Trotz as it was the regime before him, and that there was always a little bit of scapegoatism after like a one game losing streak, that it was always just the youngsters that came out of the lineup. So, you know, that's some old Islanders kind of like making its way back to the top of my brain. But, you know, I just hope that, you know, he's given the opportunity to just make that role of zone, because he did it and then obviously got sent down. And hopefully if he does it again, you know, that he makes the team better. Cause he definitely makes the team better. And we spoke also, I mean, Fritz has been really good. I think he's almost a better center for that line, because Leo Komarov would have to, you know, commit one of the seven deadly sins to get scratched. And Fritz has the, both like the hockey sense, the will, and the speed to make up for Leo's lack of skill or anything in when he's got his skates on. So those two lineup changes, I think, are going to make the Islanders like a little bit better. They give them a little bit more jump, which is something you kind of need at this part of the season, especially when your roster hasn't turned over. Like, you can just get turned into, you turn into like such a methodical unit. And the Islanders are obviously doing that. They're playing games to script, and sometimes when it doesn't work, like, they just like, all right, like we're still running our routes, and we're, you know, trying to make life hard in the defensive zone, but we're down 5-0. you know, that when you're going through the motions in a system like this, it's very easy to tell, because you won't score and you'll be scored on.
I feel that I was actually kind of weirdly excited for Tuesday night's game because of Dal Colle and Fritz, and there's a pretty straightforward argument to be made that the Islanders are better with them in the lineup than they were with Filppula and Ladd. Those guys are younger, they're definitely faster in, you know, on their feet, they're quicker. They have, you know, it's weird to say this with Andrew Ladd being on the shelf, because he's had pretty good goal scoring seasons, but there's probably a better chance that they can score than he had, because he hadn't really been scoring anything all season long when he was healthy. And then, you know, to get shut out was also, again, very demoralizing, because this is probably the best lineup the Islanders have had in weeks, because, you know, Filppula was out and they played Kuhnhackl somewhere in there, and Ladd wasn't really doing much. And so I agree with you. Like, I think that they are better with these guys in the lineup, unfortunately, due to injury. But Fritz had a couple of decent chances against the Blue Jackets, too. And he is a good player. Like, I think he's okay. But, yeah, it's just, this is when you kind of wonder if the whole, like, veteran locker room, you know, guy trope is real. And for all the skills that Dal Colle and Fritz bring to the table, that maybe, and the speed and the youth that Filppula and Ladd don't have, you know, you wonder what is removed, what intangibles are removed from that equation without those two guys. And I'm sure that, you know, Josh Bailey was talking to Shannon in the intermission, and he was like, you know, Ladd's a good guy. Like, he's, you know, it's tough to see him like that. And we're all feel for him. And I'm sure the same with Filppula too. So I don't know, like, it's easy for us to be like, yeah, those guys are better, and they are, but, you know, we're not players. We're not their teammates. We're not, like, you know, the guy who has to line up next to Andrew Ladd every game. So right. It's just tough. And I don't know. I just, it, this, I feel like, you know, once Ladd got hurt too, people were immediately like, well, he can go on long-term injured reserve, or, you know, maybe he'll they'll bury him in the AHL when he comes back. And I feel like all that's probably kind of pie in the sky stuff. Long-term injured reserve is a possibility. We're going to have to obviously wait until training camp for any decision to be made, but I feel like it's going to be one of three things. Either he's going to be in the Islanders lineup game one next year, he's going to be on long-term injured reserve, which would open up cap space for them, or he'll be retired, one or the other. Like, he's not going to be traded. He's not going to be playing in Bridgeport because there's no – he's not going to get bought out, so stop asking about buyouts, because the Islanders will get no cap relief whatsoever from that buyout-proof contract that's all basically signing bonuses and no actual salary. I don't think they're going to trade him because, A, who's going to want him, and, B, if somebody does want him, you're going to end up taking back a bad contract like Bobby Ryan or something in return. So it's one of those three things, and, you know, I don't know. I don't know what he's thinking. I mean, I know it's tough. He's probably having surgery right now on that knee. It's probably the last thing he's thinking about is next season. But it's just tough. Like, and you feel bad. Like, as much as we've criticized, everybody's criticized Ladd, and he deserves it. Like, it has not been a good scene for him with the Islanders, especially considering what he was brought in to be. But you never want to see a guy get sort of taken out like this, you know?
Yeah, it was. And it was such like a weird, innocent play that, yeah, like, you're just like, wait a minute. Like, how? He tore his ACL on that?
Yeah. And whenever I see torn ACLs, I think of Vinny Testaverde, who the Jets had been to the AFC Championship game. They were primed and ready for a Super Bowl run. He went back to throw a pass like he had done a million times in his career. He fell down, and that was it for the entire season. And I was like, oh, like, he didn't do anything. I didn't even get hit. So, I guess that's how it happens.
Yeah, it does. I mean, and the Ladd stuff, too, I think as Islander fans, we, like, as soon as that happened, like, we got, everyone got their cap space, you know, up on their computer or whatever.
Cap friendly, yeah.
Yeah, cap friendly. Like, we didn't need, you know, we need to just be kind of zeroing in on this playoff run. And, you know, I think the Ladd part of the season, and this has nothing to do with Andrew Ladd specifically, but when he came back into the lineup is kind of when the Islanders took their sharpest downturn of the year. And I think, like I said, nothing to do with like Ladd the player, but maybe just more the roster fit of now bringing this guy in who is definitely not a he was never like in the Trotz system. He played what, like a month before the Islanders really got it down. Yeah. The team was kind of becoming this well-oiled machine. Then, you know, you bring in, you know, this new guy up to new guy, even though he's 33, but like up to speed to like on how it was working, and it didn't really work. And that's when like lineup juggling started to happen a little bit more. And I just hope now that, you know, he's out of the lineup and we know he's out of the lineup for the rest of the season, that the Islanders can then say, all right, like, let's just get our best, most optimal lineup on the same page for this last week of the season. There's opportunity to do. I mean, the Buffalo game to me is, it's like a game that this team needs to show like what it is, like, what, like, just play their best. I mean, they got a game against the Panthers as well. Like, these are teams that are now,
Panthers have been eliminated officially, yeah, after last night's loss. So
we're talking about two teams that are you know dead in the water there in the last five games. So, and those games are sandwiched by against really important games, or not, I should say, yes, they're important games, but teams that are in the playoff race. So those two games, like, those are 4 points the Islanders, you know, need to bank and do it emphatically so that they can feel good about themselves. I think the Dom at the Athletic wrote a piece about whether or not there's any weight to the theory that teams that are playing well or hot down the stretch of the regular season do well in the playoffs, and the answer is kind of yes and no. It's, the playoffs are just so random to begin with. So, but if the Islanders can get this roster into, across the line, into a series against anybody but the Hurricanes and at home ice, I still think, like, you know, you should feel good about you know, really good, you know, we should always already feel really good about the season. But if they get this, you know, group over the line healthy into a playoff series, like, the Islanders are in relatively decent shape, even despite the fact that they have been shut out 11 out of 12 games or whatever it's been.
I know the article you're talking about. I didn't get a chance to read it, but I don't know, I kind of feel like it's more about matchups than momentum. You know, it depends on who you're playing. Yeah.
It's,
And, you know, I mean,
there's like this thing going on right now in the Pacific where the Flames, I think, have now, they've run away with the division, but their coach, Bill Peters, was basically quoted as saying, like, you know, it doesn't – winning the division in the Pacific is huge because you avoid the Knights. And he was talking about, like, how, you know, it's not really that important. They just went get into the playoffs healthy or whatever. And everyone's like, dude, you're either going to play maybe the best team in the conference, the Vegas Golden Knights, or the Coyotes or Avalanche. Like, what is wrong? Yeah. Wrong with you? Like, you should absolutely be gunning for, yeah, you know. And the Islanders are, don't have that luxury of being able to you know, control their destiny in that way, but there's still a chance that things fall into place. And that's what I meant before, is like, it's like this weird feeling, like when the Penguins beat the Rangers the other day, it might have ended up helping more than hurting the Islanders, just because, sure, like, they're now in this race for home ice with the Penguins, but like, if the Penguins separated themselves from the Hurricanes a little bit, so if you're really like me freaking out about playing the Hurricanes in round one,
yeah, no,
which might not be the right thing, like it might have ended up helping,
yeah,
more than hurting.
No, I am freaking out about it, and I don't want it. There's the Islanders are up 4 points on them right now, so, you know, again, they need to win games, like, that's the end of the story, and just hope that, you know, they avoid them. But, you know, hockey is fun because there's always first round upsets. Like, that's what people like about hockey. I mean, goddamn, the Edmonton Oilers in the 1990s made it a habit every year. Like, people would be like, ah, this team's not that good. And then they would always upset somebody in the first round that you expected to, you know, kind of roll over them. So it can happen. This year, I think there's a lot more parity going on. I guess the Flames, you know, people have been saying for a long time that the Flames are kind of ripe for an upset. That's possible there. The Caps, I think, could be ripe for an upset. I don't think the Lightning are ripe for an upset. They just signed John Cooper to an extension, so I can't imagine they get upset in the first round. There's no guarantee they win the Stanley Cup, obviously, but I can't imagine that team loses to whoever they play in the first round. Hopefully it's not the Islanders. But, yeah, it's you know, my worry about the Buffalo game is that the Islanders went into that second game against the Flyers at home kind of looking to you know, it was a huge game. It was Bill Torrey night. The Flyers had kind of beaten them up a week before. It was kind of embarrassing for them. And they went in with, you know, every reason in the world to come out firing on all cylinders and win that game, and they fell on their faces again. And that's my worry. Now, the Flyers are way better than the Sabres, let's be honest. You know, the Sabres have been hurt. They're not very good. And so I think it'll be a different type of challenge. But I don't want to pencil that in as a W just yet, which I hate, because, you know, it would be nice. And then the Leafs game, you know, Mike Carver made a point on the aisle seat this week that that Leafs game really doesn't mean much to the Leafs, because they're basically locked into that third spot anyway. So, you know, if they're going to come in and try and win one for Johnny, that might mean more to them than the 2 points, because they're not going anywhere. They're stuck playing the Bruins, and I'm sure they're thrilled about that. And then the Panthers again, like, how many times have the Panthers been a spoiler? Forever. And so I don't know who the hell they're what's even going to happen there. And if we get to a point where that Capitals game is meaningful for the division or for home ice, you know, it's sort of going to be like a little bit of a playoff preview. So they're all big. They're all meaningful. There's good reason for the Islanders to play well in all of them. I almost forgot about the Winnipeg game. But there's also good reason for them to come up short. And this, I don't want to, like, take away anything from this season. Like you said, like, this has been a successful season. We should be excited for this season. And this has been more fun and more successful than any of us ever thought we would ever see. You know, I mean, the Islanders had every reason to be basically the Sabres or Panthers right now, where, you know, you gave it a good run, but at the end you got eliminated. But this is, you know, we talked about this last week. Like, this team has come so far, we want to see them get rewarded with good playoff seating and home ice, and especially at the Coliseum. And I don't want to say it's slipping away, but it can slip away in a heartbeat, because everybody's playing every night back to backs and so on and so forth. So, you know, I can see a situation in which they win a game in Winnipeg. Let's put it that way. Overtime is fine. Just get it over with. And then, obviously, if they win the next two, then we're all set, and they don't need to really worry about anything. But
yeah, let's hope Barry Trotz picks up the phone with Paul Maurice and they come to a handshake agreement. Hey, let's just get this one 2-2. over the line. Then we'll flip a coin in overtime, and you know, whoever walks away with that extra point walks away with it.
They've won the division too, right? Like they're going up against.
There's still some business to attend to within that division. So yeah, and they just lost. I think they just lost to the Stars or something.
They did. Actually, they lost like 5-1 to them. They were getting shut out for a while there, and I was like, oh, man, this is another shutout for Dallas, which has made me think, oh, shit, that goes the goals against them.
It's so weird that they're the ones there. But, it's like another that the schedule – I'm not saying the schedule has done the Islanders like any favors or anything, but having like these games against the Coyotes and the Jets rather than, you know, just like a run of games through the Penguins and then the Capitals or whoever down the last five games of the year, which seems to have been the case for the NHL. Like, I think they really started to backload schedules with divisional opponents like the year before, for the past few years, but for some reason it's not the case this year. There's a lot of like the Penguins are playing the Predators, and so there's some strange games still left to be played. Like, I think I'm almost wondering like if that is going to help the fact that like, all right, like this isn't a team where we need the 2 points. They need to keep, you know, we need to keep them from getting 8 point against. It may change the strategy a little bit against a team like the Jets, but they shouldn't get the doors blown off of them. Like, this isn't a juggernaut team in Winnipeg. Like, they just need to do it. They just need to show up, and if they can, like, if they put forth an encouraging effort there, like, that's fine. More than sure, the 2 points are paramount, but like, if they kind of show that last night isn't, you know, the start of another little downward stretch, like, I'll be able to kind of sleep on Thursday night.
I was reminded that the first game they played against the Jets was back in Brooklyn, I think in November, and this was just as the Islanders were kind of starting to turn the corner, and they lost 3-1. It was 0-0 through two periods, and then the Jets kind of just took over and won, and that was the game. One of my favorite Tao of Trotz quotes all season was that was the one where somebody asked him, like, you know, are you happy your team hung tough with a really good opponent? And Trotz's answer was, they're not paid to hang tough, they're paid to win games. And it was around that time that they started winning games. And I just, that to me is the quote that kind of sums up this whole season. Like, regardless of what happens from here on out, it has been a season of changed expectations. The expectation is you got to win games, and that was kind of the start of that. And I remember you and I talked about it. Like, could you ever imagine any of the previous like six or seven Islanders coaches saying anything like that? Like, maybe Ted Nolan would have said something like that, but other than him, him and LaViolette would have been the only two people to have said anything even remotely like that. You know, you're paid to win games. Like, what are you talking about? that's what you're paid to do, really? Seriously? So, you know, hopefully they remember that and they can get back, because they did play really well in that game. But
yeah, that was about the time that, like you said, the season started to just kind of become magical. And since the past like 3 weeks, it's really hard to connect with that emotion. But I thought the Coyotes game brought some of that out.
Yeah, for sure.
For sure. So hopefully, you know, this next couple games, like, they kind of recapture some of that spirit. But because, I mean, it's been so much fun, and that's why, like, you know, these downward turns have hurt so much, is that, like, you're like, oh man, look what we have, look what we could have if, like, we're still standing, you know, needed to the summer. Like, sure, teams, we spoke a couple times already this season about how, you know, everybody, weirdly, the Islanders are writing maybe the best story in hockey, and everybody hates it. Everyone is like, you know, wants to throw the book.
Right.
Yeah, but you know, it's so weird that if they play the Penguins in the first round, I honestly think that the general sentiment outside of, you know, the maybe Devils or, you know, Flyers fan is that people will be rooting for Sidney Crosby and the Penguins, and that, you know, the underdog Penguins, look what they've been able to accomplish despite all the adversity, you know, taking on the Islanders. Like, that's the general narrative that's going to be spun.
Yeah. The Hurricanes have claimed the beloved underdog mantle for the season, and apparently nobody else is allowed to be that. You know, so the team that got
And even the Capitals, like, the Capitals, you know, their coach deserted them, and all, like, you know, they're still able to win the division. This is an amazing story.
I know it's and the Blues have come from, they were equally as dead, and now they're in the playoffs. Nobody's really talking about them. The Avalanche, I turned around one day and they're in the playoffs too. How the hell did that happen? They were dead in the water for a while there. But yeah, there's only so much room on hockey Twitter for for beloved underdog stories, and right now it's the Carolina Hurricanes, and which I kind of find funny considering that, you know, the Islanders were written off earlier than the Hurricanes were for bigger reasons. Nobody even gave them a second glance, and they've been at or near first place for half the season, and really nobody seems to care. Like, it's really
the Hurricanes are basically underwhelming or not meeting expectations. Like, they sure they're in the playoffs and have 91 points right now, but they've been such a good team for five years, six years. Like, they should be where the Capitals are. Like, let's not treat them like they've been a general disappointment until this point. And
I find it funny that go ahead.
I was going to say, that's part of the reason, like, I want to avoid them is, like, all that extracurricular noise the Islanders would have to deal with if they play the Hurricanes, not just the fact that they're a bad matchup for them.
I like how everybody's reasoning for not giving Barry Trotz to Jack Adams is, well, you know, the goalies have played really well. You can't just give the Coach of the Year award to the guy who gets the best goaltending. What do you think's been keeping the Hurricanes in the playoffs for the last 10 years? The fact that they could not get a save from the guy who they signed to a million-year contract and had to play over and over and over again. They finally move on from Cam Ward, and they get some saves, and sure enough, they're a playoff team. Like, that's okay. That, you know, the Islanders get saves, and, wow, these guys are just lucky. It's not a big deal. The Hurricanes get saves, and all of a sudden, they're everybody's favorite team. So, what am I going to say?
It's unbelievable.
You know, it's fine. And they want to do the Storm Surge thing. It's great. Keep doing it. You know, more power to you. Stuff that makes Don Cherry mad is okay in my book. Do I need to see it 18 times in my Twitter timeline? No, not really. You know, it's like the people that retweet Bob McKenzie and Elliot Friedman. We all follow Bob McKenzie and Elliot Friedman. Please don't retweet them. And don't rephrase what they said in a tweet, because we all follow them. We all see them tweeted first. It's okay. You know, but, you know, it's fine. Whatever. And, you know, we're here to enjoy this Islanders season. Even if nobody else is, like, I guess that's my feeling.
Yeah, that's the funny thing. It's like, it's still like we've talked about with the Tavares stuff and how, like, people miss the details of why that was so important. It's like the season too is the same way. Like, yeah, like, how, you know, what's so great? Like, I thought the general surface level narrative is like Barry Trotz has made them into a good defensive style team and they were getting good goaltending. What else is there need to know? And, like, oh, there's a lot. We need to sit you down and explain it from the beginning. That's maybe then after 3 hours of you hearing us out, you'll be like, oh, you know, then that is actually kind of a nice story.
The story like literally starts in 1991 and continues to 2018. So yeah, it is a long story. Real quick. So Ladd and Filppula are out, but some new guys are in, although you're not going to see them play this season. Just after we finished recording our last episode, the real episode, not the one that got eaten by my computer, the Islanders signed a defenseman out of Miami of Ohio named Grant Hutton. He was their captain for a while. He is a 6'3", 200-something-pound right-shot defenseman, so that is a pretty awesome combination. He's apparently a good player, and he had been on the Lou Lamoriello radar for a while, going back to his time with the Leafs. I don't know of anybody that had him on their radar, and he just kind of came out, and they announced that they signed him, and it was like, oh, this guy sounds pretty good. His contract starts next year, but he's already signed an ATO, an amateur tryout with the Sound Tigers, so he's going to play there. I mean, he's 22 or 23 right now, so I'm excited. Apparently, I didn't realize that right-shot defensemen were such a rare commodity out there.
It became that way like 2 years ago. All of a sudden, yeah, it's like, wait a minute, why?
I don't know.
Why are you calling him a right-shot defenseman? Like, what's going on?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a righty myself, so thinking of other, like, lefties is kind of weird to me, but yeah, especially for athletes. But so that's number one. But then a couple of days later, I guess on Monday, they signed a guy of note that we had heard about before, a guy named Bobo Carpenter. Yes, his name is Bobo, and he's the son of former NHL player Bob Carpenter. And he just finished up a 4-year run at BU, and he apparently had some suitors, and he's decided to join the Islanders. So Carpenter he's a forward, so he could play left wing and center. Don't know if he's going to be a superstar, but it sounds like he's got, you know, sort of middle six potential, you know, third line potential. And he hasn't yet, but the expectation is that he will also sign an ATO
with the Sound Tigers and play there for the rest of the season, and then, you know, the entry-level contract with the Islanders will kick in next season. Also, Oliver Wahlstrom is out there. He ain't going back to BC. Apparently, there's a chance that he could sign in Europe. I guess he's kind of weighing his options right now, but he could also sign with the Islanders, and that'd be pretty cool. I mean, I know these guys are all – this is all kind of lottery stuff. You never know what's going to happen with these college players, but it's nice when your team signs these guys, you know, because it means that they pitched them and they wanted to come to the Islanders.
Yeah, like Jack Hillen. Cool. I remember the Islanders, they were out of the playoffs of that season, and they were like, oh, but we got Jack Hillen for the last two games. And the reason he chose the Islanders, like, I think it was over the Panthers or whatever, was like, the Islanders guaranteed would step right into the lineup and play two games, like the last two games of the year.
Kevin Churchman, baby. Kevin Churchman.
Churchman. Yeah, good guy. It's the thing is, like, when Lamoriello signing these guys is obviously a little bit different from, you know, Gar Snow or whatever, for better or worse. But, you know, he's had success, and this is a long time ago, but with, like, undrafted guys. Yeah. So, like, I don't think Brian Rafalski was drafted.
No.
So,
yeah.
Maybe I'm going to, you know, put that kind of expectation on Grant Hutton, even though he's much, much bigger than Rafalski is.
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, I think that's, you know, three-time Stanley Cup champion, whatever Rafalski got. He is pretty good with that kind of stuff. And Rafalski was a really good player. I mean, talk about underrated guys. Well, he was really good, Rafalski. Like, he was like the poor man's Scott Niedermeyer. But he also played on a team with Scott Niedermeyer. So you have like the real McCoy and then the sort of like knockoff version. And they were really good. He was really, really good. And then he signed that contract.
I don't think I ever saw Brian Rafalski make a mistake in his career.
Yeah, no. Yeah. And then he signed with Detroit, and I think he won another cup, didn't he?
Yeah, I think so.
So he was pretty good. I don't know if Hutton is quite the same guy. I don't think Rafalski was 6'3", 203 pounds.
He played that size. So
yeah, he looked that big. And then Carpenter is an interesting player. I just, you know, I'm kind of surprised he didn't get drafted. But I guess, yeah, whatever the reasoning is, it's the Islanders' game now. And I also remembered when I saw these two signings, the first guy I thought about was Churchman, who was like apparently a big get, and we thought he was gonna have a future, but it's been in the AHL so far. And the other guy I think of is Jimmy Vesey, who apparently had the Islanders on his short list, although I don't know if that was all smoke and mirrors or something. And then he chose to sign with the Rangers and has kind of like sort of faded into the background. I don't know if any Rangers fan is really a huge Jimmy Vesey fan at this point. But it's, you know, again, it's exciting, but at the same time, what it means is that, you know, you're going to have like these new favorites and, you know, oh, this guy's going to be good, this guy's going to be good. And then they just never show up. So hopefully these guys will be the exception to the rule, you know, that they end up getting, you know, playing real minutes for a really good team.
Yeah, that would be nice. I remember Jack Hillen because first of all, I thought he was actually relatively good, but he was perfect for that team. You know, he's playing with like Dylan Reese or whatever, and like that defense was just a travesty.
There's such a book to be written about these sort of like no-name guys that the Islanders had for about a 5-year period that we all thought were going to be NHL players, you know, like Reese and Hillen and I don't even know who else. Hilbert or whatever.
I loved Andy Hilbert. But I think Jack Hillen's most known for is like, I think he got hit in the face twice with an Ovechkin slap shot and then played with Ovechkin because then he went to
play. I was going to say that ended up being his teammate. Yeah. Well, he was a little guy too, Jack Hillen. Wasn't he like 5'9" or something? Yeah.
Great puck mover. Great puck.
Yeah.
Not a great, he was like a very, very poor man's Nick Leddy, I feel like. You know, he's a good skater, good passer, not terribly good with, you know, not a terribly good shooter, but had all the other traits.
Yeah. There's definitely, I guess we could theoretically call that era the sort of Mark Streit era, where, you know, Streit was clearly the leader of the defense of that time and was head and shoulders above all of them. And yet I'm looking at a hockey reference right now. So yeah, so Streit, and then you got guys like Jack Hillen, Bruno Gervais, Freddie Meyer, another favorite, Sutton, and then of course the legendary Andrew McDonald. Dustin Cohn is there? Oh yeah, Wynn.
Oh yeah. Well, Dustin Cohn was like, he was like a second round pick. He was supposed to be great. But Andy Sutton was the guy who we joke about, you know, what does player have to do to get the prefix big in front of his name? And Andy Sutton, you could not you could not go a whole game without watching the Islanders or the Thrashers when he was with them or whoever without hearing Big Andy Sutton.
Yeah. Andy Sutton's size was 6'6", 245.
I'm mammoth. I always wanted him on the Islanders. So when they signed him to that deal, I remember people were like, that is, you know, not a great contract because Andy Sutton isn't that good, but he's big. And I was like, I've always wanted Andy Sutton because when you hear Big Andy Sutton 300 times in your life, you're like, I want a Big Andy Sutton.
Andy Sutton's claim to fame will always be so you're an expert when he was with the Ottawa Senators. Right? That was him. That was him, right? Oh, you're an expert. Andy Sutton was an Atlanta Thrashers legend. He had 21 goals in 273 games in Atlanta, and his second most goals with the team were with the Islanders. He had 7 goals. Boy, he spent 3 years with the Islanders.
He did. I think it was like his last year was like when he got really banged up with the Islanders.
He was hurt a lot.
He played that Big Andy Sutton style.
Yeah, Freddie Meyer and Gervais, and oh man, what a group! What a group! I mean, really, and you know, we say that with a lot of love because we put a lot of time into those guys. But then the next year was Wisniewski, Yersina. Oh yeah, Martinek. How we forgot old Radek. Yeah. Ty Wishart.
He's having like the Islanders put up like an Instagram that Radek Martinek is doing some skills camp, and I was like, I saw the picture of him. I was like, oh my god, did they sign him?
No, he's just putting on camp so you can learn the Radek Martinek style.
Love it.
Ty Wishart also played the next year. The big return for the Dwayne Roloson trade. Oof, that was But man, what a collection. And you know, again, like I'm laughing about it. We should probably sign off soon, but I'm laughing about it. But like, we all thought these guys had a future. Like, we all saw them as part of something, some rebuild that was going to continue. And it's like, oh, well, what happens when, you know, these young guys from Bridgeport come up? What are they going to do with Andy Hilbert? Or, you know, what are they going to do with Jack Hillen? Well, you know, that problem kind of took care of itself. And you know, but you know what's funny is that guys like that, if you ever ask them, not that I'll ever be in a position to ask them, but if you ever ask them, they'll always say like, oh, you know, I love playing on the island because I had an opportunity to play. And like, you know, you wouldn't have gotten that maybe anywhere else. And no, the team wasn't very good, but you had a chance to play in the NHL. And so.
Well, I think that the difference between maybe Islander fans and the rest of the league is like if Freddie Meyer got walked out to the ice, you know, as a like, hey, welcome back, Freddie Meyer. There would be, you know, literally 1,000 people standing.
I guarantee
and
somebody
like,
in the stands is a Freddie Meyer jersey.
I would be one of them.
Like, I guarantee it.
Whereas, like, you know, if like the Penguins walked out, you know, or if the Flyers walked out, Bruno Gervais played with them for a little while or something, you know, people would be like, wait, I don't know who that is.
Where
like,
did he come from?
And that's not picking on Flyers fan. It's just that, you know, we kind of have a really a weird way of taking these terrible players otherwise or would be historical footnotes and raising them to the level of cult level status because we just want cult heroes. And now we actually have a team that is turning into one. So that's why we are, you know, so in love and infatuated with this group and want to see them.
Ask a Capitals fan about Jack Hillen. I'm sure their response will be much different than ours. Oh man, I love Jack Hillen. He was really good. Meanwhile, Capitals fan like, oh yeah, that guy that called up from Hershey a couple of times. What happened to him? Is he still around? Like, is he playing Europe now? No, cult heroes is the best way to put it. That's great.
What we're really saying is we need Freddie Meyer night.
Yeah, Freddie Meyer night. That would be something. that would be . I mean, they could have a whole night. Like, I know they do alumni nights, but how about like, and you'd have to give it a name that doesn't sound like demoralizing.
Yeah, soft sell. Yeah.
Sort of like rebuild remembrance night, and it's like, you know. Meanwhile, here's all these guys. Mark Streit obviously would be number one, but you know, you have all these guys that come out. Yeah, Ty Wishart.
Thank you, Ty.
They'd have 100 goalies probably then too. You know, Al Montoya is here. we'll do that. They should do that when Michael Grabner retires.
Yeah,
you know, probably 10 years from now. So, so let's wrap this up real quick with the usual stuff. So, check out sneakyathletic.com for all of your cool Islanders apparel. They got the GOAT stuff. They got Fort Never Lose stuff. There are going to be playoff games at Nassau Coliseum. Knock on wood. So you might want to get some of that Fort Never Lose stuff before then. And if you put anxiety in the discount code box, you save 10%. So do that at sneakyathletic.com. This week's NHL name of the week is the same name I gave on Monday because I don't want to pick somebody else.
Sherrod in has the puck.
Ben Chiarot of the Winnipeg Jets, not Chariot. I hope he's still playing. I hope he's not hurt. check out NHLnames.com, obviously. Read Lighthouse Hockey every single day for your most up-to-date Islanders news and discussion. You should follow Mike at his Twitter handle, which is?
The Big Lebowski with two E's.
The Big Lebowski with two E's. You should follow Mike there. He's going to be tweeting about a lot because baseball's around the corner. Kentucky Derby's around the corner, which I had totally forgotten about. What else? Basketball, playoffs around the corner, all kinds of stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah. I try to shy away from the basketball playoffs, but because I mean the NBA is just an absolute soap opera. But I'm sure that people say that about, you know, basically every sport, but except for the one where they don't elevate their athletes to the personality level that they need to, which is the one we watch. But that's it. I mean, baseball. I think opening day is tomorrow, and
oh my god.
Yeah, yeah. And then we got the NHL playoffs, man. And then,
yeah, so that's obviously the biggest.
Yeah.
So, but you should follow Mike at the Big Lebowski with two E's. We really appreciate you hanging out with us. Sorry about not having a podcast on Monday. It would have been a lot more optimistic. It's now after the Islanders lost in Columbus. I'm even more regretting screwing that up because it would have been nice to hear. But you know, I'm glad we were able to do this, and we'll have to see. Keep our fingers crossed for see what happens in Winnipeg on Thursday night. And hey, you never know. Maybe they find their game again and, you know, can take 2 points out of there and set themselves up for a big clincher on Saturday. That'd be pretty cool, right?
Yeah, clinching at the Coliseum would be nice.
Yes, it definitely would be. So thanks again. We will talk to you next week after the Leafs game, and we'll see where the Islanders are at then. All right, thanks a lot. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.